We are in the Princeton Public Library for the Voices of Princeton Project in collaboration with the Community Foundation of Greater Mercer to record an oral history. My name is Kim Dorman. I'm here as the facilitator, and I'm with Lou Gantwerk and Barbara Vilcomerson.
Good morning. My name is Lou Gantwerk. I'll be doing the interview this morning with Barbara, and she will now introduce herself.
My name is Barbara Vilcomerson. I'm one of the rare natives of Princeton. I was born here, and so I'm looking forward to talking with you.
Good. So to start out with, maybe you could tell us about your growing up in Princeton.
Well, this may be a little repetitive for you since you just interviewed my brother, but my parents came here in the summer of 1943 when the Sarnoff Labs had opened. Dad had been working in Morristown for RCA, and then they moved to Hightstown and then to Princeton. Mom was pregnant with me, so I was literally born into the community and at Princeton Hospital. And it was really, I think, an idyllic kind of childhood. We had a tremendous amount of freedom. At the beginning, we lived at 15 Jefferson Road. And my memories there were simply that we were unsupervised. We just left the house and went and played, and we came back.
Just for the record, your parents' names?
Jess and Marion Epstein. They were both very, very active in the community, particularly my mother. She joined League of Women Voters, and she was on the local Board of Education, the State Board of Education. Then after she retired, she still was on boards, and it was an agony to walk uptown with her because every 2 seconds she would stop to talk to someone and we would be tugging on her and saying, let's go, let's go. But that was part of it. And Dad was active in the Jewish community from the very beginning. There was no Jewish center then. There was only a small Orthodox congregation. This is not my memory. It's known afterwards on Spring Street where Chuck's Cafe is. And but he was active right away in the United Jewish Appeal, and one claim to fame was that he was the chair when Einstein was the honorary chair, and he came to the house, and my mother always said somebody told her not to wash that glass, but she thought that was silly. So, but we did. We had a tremendous amount of independence. We lived there till I was in eight years old, until third grade, and I went to Nassau Street School, and they had what was then afternoon kindergarten, which was like preschool, so I was four. And I walked back and forth from Jefferson Road to Nassau Street School both ways by myself. From the time I was about five, I was allowed to walk up to the library, which is next to the Garden Theater, pick out my books, go back. So, you know, roller skating, that kind of thing outside. Not many Jewish memories from then, but very, very nice childhood.
And what was school like?
I don't have a tremendous amount of memories of the kindergarten through maybe third grade. My brother was always there, which was fun. He would lead the way. And then we moved to Valley Road School. And again, this sort of sense of independence. I remember I was joining fourth grade. My mother dropped me off, and I went into the gym by myself. And we were a new student and found out, you know, what class I was in. A funny memory from that is they had everything on the boards and it was alphabetically by your last name. And I was small then and remained small. And some big kid came up to me and said, can I help you, honey, find your class? And she did. And then we turned out to be in the same class. So but we played dodgeball and a lot of sports and square dancing and gym. I was always very physically active.
And was being Jewish ever an issue, or how did your Jewishness?
I think I always felt I knew I was Jewish, and I always felt very proud of it. My parents were a blend. My father was raised Orthodox in a family where his father almost supported the family with used clothes, but mostly studied the Talmud. And my grandmother, who had an arranged marriage with him, she'd come to Tennessee to visit an uncle when she was 16 and was sent to marry him. He was a widower with two children, and he's the oldest of her five children. She never learned English. He was raised speaking Yiddish, and My mother was raised by an extremely Yeki.
I'll say what that is.
Oh, Yeki meaning very Germanic and proper. My grandfather was actually born in the 1870s in Baltimore. And my mother was getting a PhD in mathematics at Bryn Mawr, and dad was at RCA Labs, and a friend of his had a car and said, "You want to go?" And so they happened to be sitting at the same table, and that's how they met, which was very funny. Actually, there is a funny story about this. It's nothing to do with Jewishness, but the man who took my dad there later hired David to work at RCA. And David is my husband, so this man, Jan Reichman, felt totally responsible for my life because he had introduced my parents and hired my husband. So. And David and my dad met. They were very good friends before I met him. And there was a newsletter at RCA Labs, and it said that David had come back from Israel visiting his parents, and my father immediately went and solicited him for UJA. And then they discovered they both liked to play tennis and squash, and he had several seders and Friday night dinners at my parents' home before I ever met him. Yeah. So I think in terms of Jewishness, I mean, it just was always some part of us. My mother was raised extremely secularly. She had Christmas trees and stockings and things like that, and dad was Orthodox, although he was lapsed. And they were very, very early in building the Jewish community. The Jewish community then, when they came, was mostly the merchants, the owner of Vietz, the owner of a liquor store, Harry Ballitz, whole bunch of sort of Army-Navy store. And it was only after the labs were built and the university started hiring Jewish professors that there were more Jewish people. Peter and I, we knew every Jewish kid in our class. I mean, if there was one in our class. I mean, there just weren't a lot of people. And then they started wanting to make a Jewish community. My first Sunday school was around the table with two Karapetises, Marion Robinson and her husband. And we fit around one table. And then later we went to Spring Street and we went to the Presbyterian Seminary and to the clubhouse, baseball clubhouse on Alden Street, all before the center was built. And my parents were among, I guess, about 17 or 18 families who contributed money to build the center. And my parents took a second mortgage on their house, actually, to do that. And I was a freshman in high school when they had the groundbreaking. And we have a picture somewhere of Dad with the hard hat and the first thing. He was the second president. Bill Miller was the first president. And as I've told you other times, I was the second bat mitzvah in Princeton, but it was an old-fashioned girls' bat mitzvah because we didn't read from the Torah. That came later. And it was a Friday night, snowy night. I have strong memories of my brother's bar mitzvah. I don't know if he talked about it, but sitting in the backyard, my grandfather, my mother's mother, always lived with us, and he was like a third parent to me. We were all sitting, and we wrote out the penny postcards, the little manila ones that cost 2 cents or something, and she just wrote it to everybody in the center and sent it off, and he had his bar mitzvah, and they had punch in the backyard, and everybody baked cookies, and that was that. So that's how you celebrated it.
It's changed a little bit.
It's changed a little bit.
So just to sort of focus for a minute on this aspect of your consciousness of being Jewish and not having a lot of kids in your class who are, and just being in the sort of in the midst, although you were little, of the beginning of this coming together of a Jewish community here with the university and RCA. Did that have any impact you a little? But I'm wondering how that may have, if at all, affected your sense of yourself, of your family, of your, you know, sort of identity.
I didn't have a strong Jewish education, but a very, very strong sense of being Jewish. And I think that was pretty much true of my family. I mean, you know, certainly the Jewish community was central to the family life and always felt proud of it. And also, when I was in eighth grade, I don't know how it happened, but I was by myself and I had an entire assembly when I was to explain Hanukkah to everybody and had lit candles and things like that. And I remember my mother going to school and telling them that it wasn't appropriate for everybody to sing Away in the Manger. And so, you know, this sense that we should be proud, and there were so few people, I think probably there, I was unaware of any prejudice. I was very, very naive about any of that, or unaware, blissfully unaware of, because there weren't enough people to worry about, I think. Although there were these things called the cotillions, and they were sort of secret, and they had to have an invitation, it had nothing to do with school. And it was very, you know, sort of hush-hush, and I got an invitation to go, and after I went, I was told I was the first Jewish person to ever get an invitation to that. And it was really funny, because you had to wear gloves and a dress, and the boys had to wear jackets, and Lester Lanham played, and you got a little beanie. But I think later, my sister, you know, by that time, it was different. She was 4 grades younger. They had sort of disappeared because it was considered too exclusionary, and started going through the high school and everybody got invited. So there were things that I think I was pretty much unaware of. But I really didn't know a lot about anti-Semitism or those kinds of things except through books later and reading. And I didn't know Epstein was a Jewish name. And I learned much later, this is a jump forward, because you asked the family about family and family values. We were already back here living married, and I took a course at the center and read The Ethics of the Fathers. And I was stunned because I thought they were my family values. I didn't realize they were Jewish values. So I think, you know, it kind of was by osmosis.
It's an interesting discovery.
Yeah, it was quite startling. I was a little embarrassed about it. But so, you know, there were these strong values that I now identify as Jewish values that just permeated the way we lived.
Mm-hmm. And your kids grew up here.
Kids grew up here. The Jewish Center certainly remained central. When we married, we were married in the Jewish Center. David had a postdoc, and we spent a year and a half in Jerusalem. And then we moved back here, and actually it was sort of an odd thing in a way, because I had lived away for 10 years before. I knew all the people my parents' generation and didn't know people my generation. It took a while to make good friends. And both our girls were bat mitzvah there, and David and I were married there. Mom and Dad's funerals were there. So the center has remained central, although I'm not as active as I have been at some other times, mm-hmm. mostly through adult education courses, which they've been very rich of late. Now, rabbis. It was unaffiliated because the whole idea, there weren't enough people to worry about it. And
could you say something about what affiliation means?
So there's Orthodox Judaism and Conservative Judaism and Reform Judaism and Reconstructive Judaism, all those different. And as I said, the little one on Spring Street had been Orthodox, but when the people decided to build a Jewish community center, they wanted to attract everybody. So the decision was not to affiliate with any particular branch, but have it open for the full spectrum of observance and make everybody welcome. As a result, they couldn't get the kind of rabbis that were ordained in one place or another. So there was a series of people through it. I mean, it was a constant thing. We used to have, my parents had the board meetings in our house all the time, and people come in and talk about the rabbis and then leave. And my mother used to always say, well, they always talk about the rabbis. Some stayed longer than others. And actually, Gail Gendler, who was arranging this for us, I've checked about it. Everett Gendler was the rabbi when I was in college, and my sister was, I think, part of his first confirmation class. And he attended David's and my wedding. And so, but he left also, and it wasn't really until affiliation that we had a rabbi that was really associated with one area or another. My mother used to say that every 3 or 4 years there'd be a vote about whether they should consolidate the schools, Princeton, Township and Princeton Borough and a vote to affiliate, and she was stunned when the schools consolidated before the Jewish Center, which was really in fairly recent times. So it had a long history of not being affiliated.
Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what living in Princeton has meant for you and your family. What about it do you like? How have you seen it change?
Oh, a huge change. I mean, there were blue laws when we were growing up, so that meant everything shut down on Sunday, and you could roller skate down Nassau Street. And I think I already said, I mean, we had a tremendous amount of freedom. I mean, we'd come home from school. You weren't allowed to wear sneakers to school. Girls had to wear dresses. That was definitely different. Put on your sneakers, and we were out. I mean, we were expected to be back for dinner, but, you know, we had the whole area to do. When my parents moved to Little Brook Road, the road wasn't paved. We had to walk out to get the mail, and down Route 27, there was no riverside housing. There was no Shady Brook. That was all either wooded, or that's where we went to get our corn, down where Shady Brook is now. And the streets where I would walk around were, we could put back berries and blueberries. They grew wild. I mean, and we were wild. I mean, we would just go into the woods and play. And I would get on my bike at the age of 8 or 9 and ride from Little Brook Road into Princeton for ballet classes. And I mean, you know, we were really just allowed to do what we wanted to do. The big events in town then sort of psychically were the P Raid and the Hospital Fete, the Bryn Mawr book sale, because you could buy a book for 5 cents, you know. And yeah, those are mostly the big things that we would look forward to every year. I did have one memory that I want to give to you, that when I looked at the questions and it asked about what was the biggest event you could remember. I remembered that I had always had the thing, and I had told David about it, that when I was very little, General Eisenhower had come to town, and there were lots of people yelling, and he was on a white horse, which was probably quite improbable. And it was just one of those stories, you know, that back there. So when I saw that, I decided to find out if it was a real memory. And I Googled it, and I discovered that I was 3.5 years old, and Eisenhower had come to town, not on a white horse, but he'd come to Princeton University with Herbert Hoover and Truman, who was then president. He wasn't yet president, and Hoover was the past president. And there were 6,000 people on Nassau Street cheering. So I thought you might like to see that, because it turned out I was 3.5, and it was a real memory except for the white horse.
How about that? Well, you know, we can allow your white horse.
You can give your white
3.5 years
and
old.
Then RC had this gigantic picnic every year. It was really huge. They would have rides and stay up all night, and there would be an orchestra and glass blowing and things like that. And the Hospital Fete was just a gigantic event. It was right in town. P Raid was down Nassau Street. And it was easy. It was a very, very nice way to grow up. Mm-hmm. There was, I actually thought that all college campuses looked like Princeton. But that was a surprise. It's not true. I mean, you know, it was a beautiful, kind of idyllic 50s life.
So how would you sort of apportion the percentage of sort of those family values that you discovered and your sort of parents' approach to parenting, and the independent and the freedom of being in a town which allowed this kind of freedom? How have those sort of together led to your sort of sense of independence present person?
A feeling that you can do things. Also, I mean, I had, my mother's background was unusual. Her mother died when she was 12. Mm-hmm. My grandfather had never gone to college, and he raised all three of, she was the youngest of three. He raised all three of them to go to college and to graduate school. So she had a PhD. Her sisters both have master's degree in social work. So I was raised to believe that women could do anything, be in charge, get married, bake. And I think, you know, that sense plus the freedom and feeling that, you know, I could do things really led to a feeling that, you know, you could try and do anything you wanted. Didn't always work out, but that happens. But
well, you also had a career.
I did have a career.
Do you want to say something?
Well,
about
when we went to Israel, I was the assistant to the dean of the School of Education in Jerusalem, and I wrote proposals for him. And also, one of the main thing was when he had visitors arrange for them to give seminars and things like that. So one of the people I met there was a professor at Teachers College University. And when we came back to the States, I commuted to New York. I was assistant to the dean of the Graduate School of Education at Columbia, which I did until I had children. And I took off for a while. And then I was on the local board of education and president for a few years. And then went back to work when I was 40, actually. At ETS, and I was there for 26 years. Started as a program developer and an internal change agent, program development. I ended up managing one of the big.
Did you and your mother overlap at ETS?
We overlapped. She had already retired twice and come back. And she said she needed to leave when she started being introduced as my mother, as Barbara's mother, as opposed to mine being Marion's. You know, for my whole life, I was either Marion or Jess's daughter or Peter's sister. And she said it was definitely time to leave when she started getting introduced as my mother. So it was only for a year or two, and she was not full time. So, you know, ETS was a wonderful place to work then. It was out in this, really beautiful campus, and there were very smart people and interesting things to do. And I was lucky in that I had very trainable bosses who basically let me, you know, pick what I wanted to do, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. Einstein, of course, was a big deal here.
Yeah. Right, your brother told us the Einstein story.
Which one?
The one with Martin Buber.
Oh, yeah, that was my dad's story, right? And I do remember, I don't really have any memories of him, but I have a very strong memory of people coming into my fifth grade classroom and announcing his death, which is, he was special. The people in the high school, I thought, the high school at that point was small. I don't know how big Princeton High School is now. But I think it was unusual in that something like 95% of the kids went on to secondary, post-secondary education. It had a tracking, had a small vocational, small business track. But the vast majority of people were, sons or daughters of people at either the university or some of the research centers that had grown up here. So there were a lot of... I guess we did have AP classes, but not a lot. But we had very good high school education at that time.
Did you like high school?
I liked high school. I was not a great student. I liked what I liked, and I did what I did. I liked high school, okay. It was pretty good.
And we talked a little bit. I was wondering if there's anything more to say about bringing your kids up in Princeton,
it was odd to be in, it was fun to bring them up here, although they both decamped for the city. So, although I doubt if I would have ever ended up here if it hadn't been that David was working here. They were just on the cusp, it seemed, before there was really a Jewish nursery school or anything like that. So they didn't have that early experience with a Jewish preschool or going through. And they were fairly resistant to going to Hebrew school a few times a week. And our younger one, Sara, because she was going 3 days a week, announced that she would never, ever make her kid do that, and then she said, they're going to go 4 times a week. That's funny. But, so they went through that system, too. I don't think that their Jewishness was as central to the way they thought about themselves as it was to me. Although I wasn't conscious that I thought that way until later when I moved away and realized that it really was sort of a a sense of balance and personhood. Our older daughter ended up working, as you know, in an organization called Jewish Voice for Peace for many years, and she stayed active in social justice kinds of things. And Sarah moved away much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Becca's now on her board of her synagogue, so it has taken to some degree married an Israeli.
The magic happens.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so there are other sort of aspects of how you've seen the changes in Princeton. You mentioned, growing up, you had blue laws, and you could, roller skate on Nassau Street.
Oh, you could park the car.
And you could park your car.
Actually, you didn't park parallel. You park. It had came in like this.
Huh.
And when I lived, there was Acme, and there were two grocery stores right on Nassau Street, Woolworths, things like that. All local stores. There were none of the kind of chain stores. I mean, everything was locally owned. And since Veet's, which was cafe, was owned by a friend of my parents, that if I wandered in and looked hungry, he would always give me an ice cream cone. Anybody who's lived here has seen enormous changes everywhere. I mean, one big change was that when they first did the consolidation things, the borough was much more developed and wealthier, and the township was all spread out. And the people in the borough didn't want all that extra tax base to come in. And then as the township got developed, it flipped. So it was very, very undeveloped. I mean, some of it is unrecognizable. So, there was the shopping center was built when I was still young. The shopping center in Princeton,
mm-hmm.
The Quaker Bridge Mall was much later. So there weren't any of those kinds of things. And this goes back to very non-Jewish things. I mean, at Palmer Square, there was Santa Claus would come and hand out candy canes. Do they still do that? I have no idea. And there were two movie theaters. There was one down at the bottom of Palmer Square. I think if everybody of every age, when they get this age, looks back and sees their time as being easier and more bucolic, perhaps. But it really was. I mean, if you think about the 50s compared to the 60s compared to now, when I view the sophistication of my granddaughters compared to what we knew. Quite amazing difference.
Are there people that you grew up with, friends that you had then that you're still friends with that are still in Princeton?
Mm-hmm.
Could you say something about
Well, actually, about when I first moved back, I didn't connect with people, but shortly, I guess it was around our 50th high school reunion, a few people took it upon themselves and got in touch with me, and we sort of had a core group and started reaching out to people. And that group of people included someone who had been just about my best friend in high school, who had moved away and lived in Italy and lived in Greece and now moved back to Princeton. And now we have sort of email groups, and some of us go to the Opera HD thing together, and some are more social than the other. But because of social media, mainly email for me, I'm not on the others, we're in touch with each other. And it's nice. I mean, mm-hmm. do a couple of people I take, fairly frequent walks with and see. And there's a sense of ease and that you sort of know someone even if you don't, because of the way that you shared so many experiences,
mm-hmm.
Growing up. One of them, I was a cheerleader, so the woman who came back were cheerleaders, and every once in a while we giggle about that. And to talk again about the independence, her father had a brother who was a professor at NYU, had a pied a terre in the village, and we were 13, I think it was the before sophomore year in high school, we were allowed to go to New York and stay for a week or so by ourselves in this apartment and explore the city. I'll tell you one thing that's changed, though. We bought tunics that were sleeveless and buttoned down the front, came to our knees, and we decided together when we would wear them, and we wore black tights and long sleeve white blouses, little kind of circle pins. My mother said only her face and her hands were showing. And we got to school, and we were called into the principal's office and told to kneel on the table, and that if our skirt touched the top of the table, we could stay in school, and if it didn't, we had to go home and change. Didn't touch. My mother was at work. I called a friend's mother and went home to change, and then took the rest of the day walking back to school. And that was Florence Burke, who was very active in Princeton, and I think on the library board and stuff like that. We ended up on some board together at some point, and I used to tease her about it. She said it was one of her worst memories. But if you think about how kids dress today, that was really pretty, face and hands, that was it. And when I was young, I mean, fourth grade, we were not allowed to wear pants to school, which meant you had to wear a snowsuit under your skirt.
That's certainly a change.
Yeah, that has certainly changed.
Are there other sort of ways in which Princeton has been both terrific and maybe not so terrific in your experience here, for you, for the kids, just generally, and the way the town has evolved?
Schools didn't, I can't really think of bad things to say about the experience growing up.
That's fine.
It is very different, to live here. I mean, now I've lived here longer as a married person and a parent than I have, during those formative years till you're about 18.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never expected to come back here and live, but I'd have to say it's been a pretty nice life. I mean, especially when you look back and see, the distance people's traveled.
What parts of the community do you take advantage of?
I did volunteer work after I was on the ACLU board for New Jersey for 15 years, I guess. And on the Planned Parenthood board when I was still working for about 5 or 6 years, was on the board of the Princeton Adult School for a while. And as I said, I was on my local school board. I don't live in Princeton proper. I live in South Brunswick Township. And then after I retired, which was in 2008, I think, I got trained as a domestic violence response person. I did that for a while, and then I became a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate for kids, for kids who are removed from their homes for various reasons. I did that for 10 years, and the music and education and dance, I mean, it's just incredible. I've audited courses at the university,
okay.
And I now take things at Evergreen, and we've always had subscriptions to music at MacArthur and dance at MacArthur, and it's a very rich. I mean, a lot of people move here to retire because of the richness of the community. I would say the biggest negative right now is just it's gotten big and it's gotten expensive, and it's hard for people to live here. Although it was a recurrent theme even when I was growing up, that teachers and policemen and firemen couldn't afford to live in town. There's always this tension. Say something about the black community, which, was nearby here. At the 50th, it was kind of fake. They talked about it as the Princeton plan for ending segregation and integrating, but it was really quite different. I mean, my mother was very involved in that, so they had two schools, one was and they simply made one a junior high and one a high school. I mean, it was just effortless. But at that 50th high school reunion, I sat with somebody who was a little bit older than us, a black guy, and he started telling us about what it was like to get ready for that integration, and that all their churches took all the kids and groomed them and told them, you know, how to dress and how to behave, and their experience then that the Princeton Borough Police were not so nice, and how to, and then he said they went to school and absolutely nothing happened and everything was fine. But it was, you know, sort of a revelation to hear about that. When I was in grade school, I had a large group of integrated friends. We all played, you know, dodgeball, and the kids would come to our house and play in the driveway. The captain of the cheerleaders when I was in high school was black. But there was still some degree of segregation in terms of, I think, people, you know, eating together and being separated. But again, I think if you ask people who are black about their experience, it would be different than my experience at looking at it. I would say there was more separation from the academic track to the people who were in vocational and business than there was otherwise. It seemed more around, you know, the intellectual aspirations than not. Very few Asians or Guatemalans at the time. There was an ongoing, you know, the Institute always had people come in and just stay for a year or two, and those kids came to class. We had sending districts from Belmead and Cranberry, so they, in order for the school to be large enough, they didn't have schools, high school of their own.
So it gave you at least an opportunity to meet people who came from other, whatever, perspectives, cultures, a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we had AFS students, we had other cultures, but, you know, it's just sort of, I think, accepted. I mean, it really seemed very easy to me. I'm maybe missing a harder edge.
No, part of this project is to have these different perspectives and how people have lived in this community and how the community has affected them and how what their impact has been on the community. So,
you know, I think first having mom and dad who were, you know, both extremely active in different ways meant that we were connected to the community and then following my brother through school because he was president of the school when I was in sixth grade. He was president of the school when I was in high school. You know, it kind of eased things. Mm-hmm. My sister had a different experience because she wasn't ever in school with any of us. But, you know, so that was, you know, a nice bubble.
Yeah, well, that's great. How do you think your kids would describe growing up in Princeton?
Very differently. I think very differently. First of all, one of the things I think really changed and is that I was certainly not aware of drugs and alcohol when I was growing up. And we used to laugh and say, you know, somebody who was fast, meaning not so, you know, good, was somebody standing by the tennis court smoking a cigarette. And by the time my kids got to school, they had friends who were already alcoholics when they were 12 years old. And there was a lot of drinking at parties and drugs. And, you know, I think it was a more difficult environment. They were in school, let's see, they were in high school in the 80s. They were very, very, very different times. I mean, when I traveled a lot. I was went to Italy when I was in high school, and then I had a long trip away before I was married, and my grandfather wrote to me every week. And the whole time I was gone, 7.5 months, I think, I arranged in Hong Kong. It took 2.5 days to arrange to be able to call my parents on my birthday. And now, you know, and there's good with it and not good with it, the connection people have through social media all the time, but they don't know how to get lost or find your way around. You know, you put on Waze and it has a little dot go, you know, as opposed to getting off a bus and trying to figure out where you are in the world. And so the experience is just totally different. And then they're, you know, Becca's kids, their experience, they grew up in the city. So they're city girls, and they were taking public transportation by themselves when they were in middle school. And different kind of sophistication, mm-hmm. but I, you know, they'll look at their phone to know what the temperature is rather than looking outside. It's different.
Right, things change.
Definitely different.
So are there other things about Princeton or about your life in Princeton that you've thought about that you'd like to...
Well, Princeton was just different. I mean, you know, there were two grocery stores on Nassau Street, and the Five and Dime and eateries, and a secondhand store, an Army-Navy store. There was a bakery off of Moore Street.
Their memories are very fond of growing up in that...
I was very fond of growing up here.
...sort of place.
Know, yeah.
It was a good
I can complain about a lot of things, but I really can't complain about my children. Yeah, it was very nice.
Oh,
yeah. And I mean, again, it's a different experience for people. My, you know, my brother was the oldest, and he and my dad played tennis and squash together. And my grandfather lived with us, and he lived to be until he was 99. But he and I were very, very close. So my mother would work, and I would come home, and you know, he and I would spend the afternoon together, and he would tell me stories. He wrote fairy tales. We'd garden together. But my sister had a very different experience with him because he was that much older. She was different. And, you know, so we each have our own path through.
Yeah.
And I think mine was very benign.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, have that.
I had a happy childhood.
As we become grandparents, yeah. Having had
but also I think, you know, I think by nature I just would accept things. And, I mean, that's the way they are, and you would deal with them and go on. You know, things that I look back sometimes and think, like, that really wasn't right or something. They didn't bother me because it just was. One thing that's different is the lake would freeze every year by about sometime between Thanksgiving and Christmas. We could skate all winter. And again, this sense of independence that I don't think kids, I mean, my mother would make a thermos of hot chocolate and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and they would go in each pocket, and they would drop us off down by where the, you know, opposite Shady Brook in the morning and pick us up at 4 o'clock at the other end, and we did what we did. It was just off. I mean, it's sort of unimaginable now.
Yeah. Well, it's terrific that you had those experiences. I mean,
yeah.
How wonderful. Yeah.
It leads.
Well, good.
Okay.
So,
we can wrap up. I don't have to keep talking.
No, that's fine. Unless there's anything else, I think this has been, you know, it's a very interesting sort of story that you've told, and one that, you know, sort of highlights sort of what was wonderful about this town growing up from your perspective and what it afforded you and your kids to be here. And so, you know, RCA was lucky to get your father and your husband.
Right.
And, you know, and you guys have been lucky to be able to make it so special for yourselves here. So thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.